Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Statutory Priority and Structured Dismissals Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On March 22, 2017, the Supreme Court decided Shazuski v. Jevic Holding Corporation. Jevic Transportation, Inc., a trucking company headquartered in New Jersey, was purchased by a subsidiary of Sun Capital Partners in 2006. In 2008, Jevic filed for bankruptcy under Chapter 11 of the Bankruptcy Code, at which that point it owed about $73 million to various creditors. Jevic's former truck drivers then sued it for violating federal and state worker adjustment and retraining notification acts by failing to provide the requisite 60 days notice before a layoff. Separately, unsecured creditors filed a fraudulent conveyance action. In March 2012, representatives of all the major parties met to negotiate a settlement of the fraudulent conveyance suit. The representatives, except for the driver's representative, agreed to a settlement that would provide for payment of legal and administrative fees, a schedule for the payment of various creditors, though not the drivers, and ultimately a structured dismissal of the Chapter 11 bankruptcy. The drivers and U.S. trustee objected, arguing that the settlement would improperly distribute estate property to creditors with lower priority than the drivers, in violation of the bankruptcy code. The bankruptcy court rejected these objections and approved the proposed settlement. The U.S. District Court and then the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit affirmed, holding that the bankruptcy court had not abused its discretion in approving a structured dismissal that did not adhere strictly to the bankruptcy code's priority scheme. By a vote of 6-2, the U.S. Supreme Court reversed the judgment of the Third Circuit and remanded the case. In an opinion by Justice Breyer, the court held that, 1, the drivers have Article III standing to bring the present litigation, and 2, bankruptcy courts may not approve structured dismissals of Chapter 11 bankruptcy cases that provide for asset distributions which do not follow ordinary priority rules established by the Bankruptcy Code without the consent of affected creditors. Justice Breyer's majority opinion was joined by the Chief Justice and Justices Kennedy, Ginsburg, Sotomayor, and Kagan. Justice Thomas filed a dissenting opinion, in which Justice Alito joined. To discuss the case, we have Thomas Plank, who is the Joel A. Katz Distinguished Professor of Law at the University of Tennessee College of Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Plank.
In an opinion authored by Justice Breyer and joined by five other justices, the Supreme Court held that a bankruptcy court does not have the power to approve a settlement agreement and dismissal of a Chapter 11 bankruptcy case that, without the consent of all creditors, provides for a distribution of settlement proceeds among creditors of the debtor in a way that does not comply with the priority rules for distributions in a Chapter 11 reorganization plan or in a Chapter 7 liquidation. As a matter of disclosure, I had joined the brief of the law professors in support of the petitioners. Justice Thomas, joined by Justice Alito, dissented not on the substance but on procedural grounds. The respondent, Jevic Holding Corporation and its subsidiaries, which operated a trucking company, were acquired in June 2006 by respondent Sun Capital Partners in a leveraged buyout financed by loans secured by Devic's assets from the respondent's CIT Group Business Credit as agent for a lender group and also secured by a loan from Sun. In May 2008, Jevic stopped substantially all of its operations and sent notices of termination to most of its employees and filed a Chapter 11 petition. Shortly thereafter, the petitioners, a group of about 1,200 drivers, filed a claim for damages under the Federal Worker Adjustment and Retraining Notification Act and its state counterpart, the WARN Acts, because of the debtor's failure to provide 60 days notice of termination. The drivers obtained a judgment that they claimed was worth about $12.4 million, and approximately $8.3 million of that claim was entitled to priority over general unsecured creditors under the priority rules that the Bankruptcy Code Sections 507, A4, and A5 provide for certain pre-petition claims of workers. In addition, an official committee representing the unsecured creditors commenced a fraudulent transfer adversary proceeding against the secured creditors, CIT and Sun, claiming that the leverage buyout financing by the secured creditors was avoidable as fraudulent under Section 548 of the Bankruptcy Code and the comparable State Fraudulent Transfer Act. More than 3 years later, the secured creditors reached a settlement agreement that resolved all claims among the debtor JEVIC, the official committee, and the secured creditors. The settlement provided $3.7 million, of which $2 million would be contributed by the secured creditors, to satisfy unpaid Chapter 11 administrative claims, and then the remaining assets of the bankruptcy estate of about $1.7 million to pay certain higher priority claims, and then the claims of creditors with lower priority than the drivers. The settlement also provided for dismissal with prejudice of the fraudulent transfer adversary proceeding against secured creditors and dismissal of the Chapter 11 case. However, under the settlement, the drivers received nothing. The court relied on Section 349 of the Bankruptcy Code, which authorizes the dismissal of the bankruptcy case and restoration of all parties to their pre-petition status unless the bankruptcy court, quote, for cause, close quote, orders otherwise. A dismissal that alters the pre-petition status of the parties for cause is known as a structured dismissal. The drivers and the United States trustee objected to this structured dismissal because the settlement agreement provided no payment of the drivers' priority WARN claims, but provided for payment to unsecured creditors who held a lower priority. The bankruptcy court rejected these objections and approved the settlement and dismissal. Bankruptcy court concluded that the possibility of recovery by JEVIC's bankruptcy estate or the drivers on the fraudulent transfer claim was remote. Also, because of the liens held by Sun and CIT on the bankruptcy estate assets, there were no funds to pay administrative expenses, and therefore, Chapter 11 plan could not be confirmed. And neither the drivers nor the other unsecured creditors would receive anything in a Chapter 7 liquidation. The District Court and the Court of Appeals for the First Third Circuit upheld the bankruptcy court, and then the Supreme Court granted a writ of certiorari. Now, in the Supreme Court, the court noted that a confirmed plan under Chapter 11 must provide for payment to creditors of different classes in accordance with a fixed priority waterfall, unless the affected creditors consent to a different treatment. In particular, a plan must pay priority unsecured claims, like the driver's WARN claims, in full before lower priority creditors and general unsecured creditors may receive anything under the plan, unless the higher priority claimants otherwise agree. However, in this case, there were no funds even to pay administrative expenses, and therefore no plan could be confirmed in a Chapter 11. If a plan cannot be confirmed, the bankruptcy court must either convert the case to a Chapter 7 liquidation or dismiss the case, whichever is in the best interest of the creditor and the estate. Under Chapter 7, the priority of the estate is distributed according to the same distribution priority waterfall required of a Chapter 11 plan. However, in this case, the only remaining unencumbered asset of the estate was the fraudulent transfer action against the secured creditors. The bankruptcy court believed that this asset had little value, in part because there were insufficient assets to pay the cost of liquidating the action against well-funded defendants who could raise many complicated defenses to the action. According to the bankruptcy court, had determined that in Chapter 7 liquidation, the holders of the administrative expense claims, the drivers, and the other unsecured creditors would receive nothing. Because of these conditions, the bankruptcy court thought that the settlement agreement and dismissal that produced about $3.7 million to pay administrative expenses and a small percentage of the claims of the junior priority creditors and the general unsecured creditors, but nothing for the driver's higher priority WARN claim, in return for a release of CIT and Sun from liability for the fraudulent transfer adversary proceeding, was the least bad alternative. The settlement did produce some benefit for the holders of some claims, and the court believed that the drivers would be no worse off than they would have been in a liquidation. So the district court and the Court of Appeals basically affirmed on these bases. And the Supreme Court reversed. The court held that a bankruptcy court had no authority to approve a final settlement distributing property of the estate contrary to the distribution priority rules for a Chapter 11 plan or a Chapter 7 liquidation. Although the Bankruptcy Code had no express prohibition from deviating from the priority scheme in a dismissal, the court noted the significance of Congress's express statutory priority schemes for Chapter 11 reorganizations and Chapter 7 liquidations. The court also noted that the purpose of the bankruptcy court's power to alter the pre-petition status quo in a dismissal for clause was designed to protect the interests of parties in a bankruptcy case that had relied on determinations made during the case. A final distribution of bankruptcy estate assets that differ from the express priority rules was no such cause. The court, however, did state that it was not expressing a view on the legality of structured dismissals in general. The court also distinguished other situations in which interim distributions are made and approved by bankruptcy courts. They could be seen as violating the priority scheme. Now, specifically, these would be the first day orders that permit the debtor to pay in full pre-petition wages owed to workers so that they would continue to work, and to pay pre-petition claims for so-called critical vendors to ensure that they would the vendors would still supply services and property post-petition. The court noted that such payments enable the debtors to reorganize and make the disfavored creditors better off. A final distribution, contrary to the priority rules, however, didn't serve any of these purposes. Finally, the court rejected the idea on which the lower courts had relied, that the uniqueness of the circumstances presented a rare case that justified the deviation from the priority scheme. The court noted that the introduction of a so-called rare case exception would introduce uncertainty and increase the costs of bankruptcy reorganization. I think this is an excellent decision and an excellent opinion. Almost from the beginning of the history of English and American bankruptcy law, the cost of bankruptcy proceedings has always been a concern. This opinion is important for not introducing a source of potentially significant costs in Chapter 11 proceedings. And then whatever one may think of the particular priority scheme that Congress chose or whether Warren Act claims should be entitled to priority, I think it's important for the method of interpreting the bankruptcy code that in the absence of an express answer to a particular question in the bankruptcy code, the court should adhere closely to the policies of the bankruptcy code expressed by Congress in other provisions and not attempt to create exceptions based solely on the circumstances of a particular case or solely based on particular views of the policies of a particular provision, as in this case, whether the Warren Act claims really should have been entitled to priority or not.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.fedsoc.org/multimedia.